our oil, it's our future. Say it with me. It's our oil, it's our future.
Protests against the governor's bill to lower oil taxes. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, April 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new report on improving planning for Arctic development.
It's always good when we take the time to look and plan.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
As protests against legislation overhauling the state's oil tax structure were held across the state today, the bill continues to evolve inside the Capitol building. The latest version would lower taxes even more than the last one. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
It was past 2 a.m. on Thursday before the House Resources Committee settled on a bill that they could pass out. They went through 34 amendments, with many failing, some passing, some being withdrawn, and others folding into each other. Committee co-chair Eric Feige, a Chickaloon Republican, explains that they set up a mechanism where a state agency could issue bonds for oil processing facilities on the North Slope, and that they extended a credit for small oil producers. But the biggest change?
Oh, we lowered the base rate, which reduces the government take down to a range that all our consultants told us was a competitive range for the state.
They brought down the tax ceiling from 35% to 33%. Each percentage point is estimated to be worth about an extra $100 million in revenue. A group of swing votes in the Senate is closely watching those changes. Republican Senators Click Bishop, Peter Michicki, and Mike Dunleavy have previously stated that they want Alaska to be comparable with other states in terms of the tax structure, but they don't want to undercut them. None of the three senators had taken a position on the bill Thursday, and their offices say they're still reviewing the changes. The bill still has to get through one more committee and a vote on the House floor before it gets to them. Feige thinks that the changes his committee made should be within their bounds.
I'm optimistic that the Senate will agree with our bill and when it goes over for a vote of concurrence, that they will concur. If not, there's a process for that.
Just 10 hours after the Resources Committee passed their bill out, a couple hundred people gathered in front of the Capitol to protest the oil tax bill in any form.
We're going to stand up for this?
Yeah.
We're going to fight this giveaway?
The rally was organized by Backbone, a group that has been drumming up opposition to what they describe as a billion-dollar giveaway to oil companies. Rodney Hessen says he came out because he's worried that the legislation would hurt the state's treasury without getting a guarantee of more oil production.
It's going to wipe out our huge savings account that we've been able to build up while the rest of the country suffers. It's a very backwards way to think.
In response to the rally, the pro-oil tax Make Alaska Competitive Coalition sent out a statement saying that Alaskans voted for reform last November when they elected a solidly Republican legislature. The group has no plans for a counter-protest at this time. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The Alaska House passed legislation that would change the tenure system for urban teachers, extending their probationary period from 3 years to 5. During the probationary period, teachers can be let go without cause. But if they stay in a district long enough, they're automatically granted the right to be put on an improvement plan before they can be dismissed. For many in the Capitol building, the issue of tenure is a personal one. A number have been employed as teachers or have family members who work in the education system. Representative Bob Lynn, an Anchorage Republican, falls into both of those categories. He voted against the bill, and he sponsored an amendment striking language that would have allowed schools to revisit a teacher's tenure periodically.
We need more teachers in Alaska, not less. Why would any teacher who is smart enough to teach want to apply for a job teaching in Alaska when the only thing we can hope for is a phony baloney tenure on top of a less than good state retirement system.
While teachers' unions have come out against the bill, supporters of the bill, like Palmer Republican Shelley Hughes, believe changes to the tenure system are needed to give schools, districts more flexibility in hiring and firing.
And I taught in a private and public institution, and I wasn't cut out for it, so I do have a deep admiration. This is definitely not an attack on teachers, Mr. Speaker. It's about our children.
Because of the difficulty of attracting teachers to rural schools, the bill was amended to make an exception for districts with fewer than 5,500 residents. The bill ultimately passed 28-10, with three Republicans joining the minority Democrats in opposition. Dozens of federal, state, and local agencies have a say on how development happens in Arctic Alaska. A report released today makes the case for doing a better job coordinating the work those agencies are doing as big decisions are made on important Arctic issues. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
If your eyes glaze over when you hear the words integrated management plan, you're not alone. Mine did too when I read the email the Department of Interior sent out about the new Arctic report. But Fran Ulmer has a better way to describe it.
It's a call to action.
Ulmer is chair of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. The report is called Managing for the Future in a Rapidly Changing Arctic. It describes those rapid changes and many of the proposed developments in the region in energy, tourism, shipping, and even fishing. Ulmer says the report makes the case that in the past, agencies charged with making decisions on development haven't done a good job coordinating with each other.
The piecemeal decision-making approach, which has been mostly how things have happened, won't cut it in the Arctic, given what a very special place it is, that it's both valuable and vulnerable, that it's important to the people who live there, Alaska Natives, but also to the future of the state and to the nation.
Ulmer says the report invites people to the table to do a better job coordinating activity in the Arctic. Susan Murray with the environmental group Oceana is especially pleased the report emphasizes using science along with local and traditional knowledge when making big decisions. She says she's optimistic the report will lead to more comprehensive planning in the Arctic.
It's always good when we take the time to look and plan. It is the times that we rush into something is where we end up with mistakes and disasters, and it is always heartening to us when we see our government stop and take a look so that we're not just doing it piecemeal and turning it into essentially a gold rush that we then have to correct in the future when we make mistakes.
Along with the report, the Arctic Research Commission is launching something it calls the Arctic Science Portal. Ulmer says it's an attempt to make research more accessible to the general public and to industry and regulators.
It's a door that unlocks other doors. So if you're interested in what research has been done on ice or on marine mammals or on anything else, it will help you find where you need to go to get information about that research, who did it, when it was done. So it doesn't answer the question about ICE. It tells you where to go to get that.
Ulmer says the web portal is still a work in progress, and that also describes the plan to do a better job coordinating development in the Arctic. Ulmer says a lot of people in the lower 48 still don't even realize the U.S. is an Arctic nation, so it's tough to get the attention and resources that are necessary for Arctic planning. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a small ship cruise line increases its presence in Southeast.
We will be focusing especially on recreating authentic historical moments.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage of state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
An anti-immigration group is running ads in Alaska, calling on Senator Mark Begich to oppose any new comprehensive immigration package. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, Senator Begich is dismissing the ads as outside spending.
The group Numbers USA says it aims to educate voters in states with senators who could play a pivotal role in the coming immigration debate. The group started airing this ad throughout Alaska this week.
Who thinks Senator Mark Begich's plan to bring in foreign workers to take Alaska jobs is a good idea?
Not me.
Who wants him to support a Senate proposal to bring millions more immigrant workers to America?
Not me.
Who thinks Senator Begich should support amnesty for illegal aliens, giving away Social Security benefits?
Amnesty? Not me.
Will Mark Begich put jobless Alaskans first? Call him and ask him.
Roy Beck is the executive director of Numbers USA. He says Senator Begich has been tight-lipped on immigration since arriving in the Senate 4 years ago, except on J-1 visas. Those allow foreign students to work in Alaska for the summer on student visas. Fish processors say the industry needs foreign workers who are willing to work the hours and for the pay. Beck says he doubts the need for J-1 visas.
It is a sellout of the American worker if he trades his vote and votes for the entire amnesty and this huge increase in foreign workers. Because anytime you increase the number of foreign workers, you drive down the value of wages for the American workers.
A group of eight senators is crafting a comprehensive immigration reform package. It would create a path to citizenship for the 11 million or so undocumented immigrants living in the U.S., so long as they paid fines and back taxes. Beck dismisses that as amnesty, but Senator Begich calls it a step in the right direction. He says the new ad is full of lies.
I don't support amnesty, and I don't support giving away Social Security benefits to illegal immigrants, so I don't know what they're talking about.
But he does agree with Beck that his vote for an overall package depends on whether J-1 visa reform is included.
We want to make sure this is done right, and if we can't get this in, it may hinge on that.
The Senate reconvenes from a two-week recess on Monday. The group could introduce the legislation as early as next week. Most expect debate to begin in earnest in May. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The Election Commission has started reviewing question ballots from Tuesday's municipal election in Anchorage, but they won't be counting absentees until next week. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
In a small room tucked into a corner on the first floor of City Hall, stacks of yellow ballots line long cafeteria-style tables. The Election Commission is tallying up the number of envelopes containing question ballots cast throughout Anchorage's 120 precincts during Tuesday's municipal election. Several observers are watching because of a close race in the West Anchorage district where Assembly Chair Ernie Hall was challenged by write-in candidate Nick Moe. Moe got into the race just a couple of weeks before the election because he didn't like the way Hall handled a controversial ordinance that stripped municipal workers' unions of power. Hall led the assembly when they voted to shut down public testimony before everyone had a chance to speak on the ordinance. Hall had just 93 votes more than Moe at the end of election night on Tuesday. Alice Hanley is the co-chair of the Election Commission. She's leading the review of the question ballots from the precincts on Election Day.
When they went to vote, they were not on the register. So now we need to look them up in the computer to make sure they are a registered voter.
There may be additional question ballots from the absentee by mail and the absentee in-person voting, which will be counted after the official public canvass begins next Thursday. Amanda Moser is the deputy clerk of elections. She says between question ballots and absentee ballots, there are more than 5,000 ballots to be reviewed citywide.
The total number of question ballots cast at precincts on Election Day is 1,017. There are 4,837 ballots issued throughout the city, absentee.
Barbara Jones is the clerk for the municipality of Anchorage. She says her office is following the rules very carefully.
The code says that we don't count any ballots until after the public session of canvass. So the public session of canvass is on Thursday, April 11th at 6 o'clock, and then we'll be counting the question and absentee ballots after that, And then after that would be the time that we would start looking at any write-in candidates or races.
As Jones explains, there is a write-in policy. It works like this.
We will look at the write-ins if they exceed the votes of one of the candidates that's already in the race.
Michael Dunsmore says he believes that'll happen. He's a volunteer with the write-in Nick Mo campaign. He says it's not scientific, but they believe Mo has the votes to win.
We strongly believe that the question ballots and the absentee in-persons will weigh very heavily in our favor. The people who are politically activated and politically motivated are the ones who are going to be using these alternative means of voting.
The official public canvass, which begins Thursday, April 11th at 6 p.m., is a public meeting. That's when election officials will present the number of question and absentee ballots they plan to reject and say how many will count. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Sitka Sound sack roe herring season is over. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced the closure this morning. After three competitive openings, the fleet captured just under half the 11,549 tons it was hoping for. As in 2012, this year's herring began spawning shortly after seining opened, dramatically reducing the fishery's take. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
This year's commercial sack roe herring fishery in Sitka opened on a Wednesday. On Thursday, there was another commercial opener, but there was spawning visible on 2 miles of shoreline. On Friday, there were 11 miles of spawn. By Saturday, when managers opened a third and final commercial opener, 18 miles of spawn. On Sunday, 28 miles. Bill Davidson is the Southeast Regional Management Coordinator for Commercial Fisheries with the state.
With a major spawning event like that, there aren't many opportunities to harvest pre-spawning herring.
Overall spawning miles eventually reached 42. As spawning began to taper, Davidson and other managers knew that the chances for completing this year's commercial catch were becoming remote. The sack roe fishery is not just about getting your net around fish.
It's not a question of how much herring can we harvest. It has to be how much high-quality roe can be harvested, and it's all a matter of timing.
This is the second year in a row that spawning has outpaced the commercial harvest. In 2012, fewer herring arrived than forecast, in part because of problems with the forecast model, and in part because of the vagaries of nature that every management biologist contends with.
One of the aspects of fisheries management that I've observed across all species is every year is different, and it's kind of a function of not only the biology, but the behavior, local conditions, the weather. So I don't see any fundamental change in herring spawning behavior here.
One major difference this year, however, is that in 2012, the Alaska Board of Fisheries reserved roughly 10 square miles near the community of Sitka for the subsistence harvest of roe on hemlock. Davidson refers to the restricted area as a refuge, and the herring apparently got the memo.
The first opening was immediately west of the boundary line for this area, and we had identified a fairly substantial volume to as a basis for the first opening, and yet the boats and the fishing in that area, it looks like a lot of the fish that we had been fishing on did move into that zone.
Davidson does not blame the new subsistence area for the failure of the commercial fishery. The department has always attempted to disperse effort, but he says it is certainly a part of the overall picture. Most of this year's major spawn occurred in the area. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering that public transportation can benefit their businesses and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, school, and social opportunities. There's more information at alaskamobility.org. This message sponsored by the nonprofit organizations Alaska Mobility Coalition and the American Public Transportation Association.
Lawmakers in Bethel are considering reshaping public decency laws within rural cities' limits. From KYUK in Bethel, Mark Earhart has more.
Law enforcement in Bethel can issue citations for things like public intoxication and indecent exposure under state statutes. But lawmakers say clauses in the Bethel Municipal Code limit officers from issuing city citations. At Bethel's last city council meeting, the Public Safety and Transportation Commission introduced an ordinance that would tighten up several of these laws.
Our Bethel Municipal Code doesn't have a lot of teeth in it. It's like my dog has very few teeth left in it, and if he bites you, you'd probably not even know it.
Council member Sharon Sigmund says the amendment would make it illegal to walk city streets or ice roads while intoxicated.
It's not geared to prohibit the intoxication as much as it's geared to keep these areas of our community safe. Public streets and roads, ice road or highways, are very dangerous areas. They have a lot of fast-moving big vehicles, a lot of foot traffic as well, and to have an intoxicated person in those particular areas makes for an exponentially greater risk of harm, not only to the person who's intoxicated, but anybody traveling on those roadways.
The amendment would add language against littering and defacing property, shoplifting, and selling tobacco to minors. The ordinance would also prohibit public excretion within the city.
I can understand out in the tundra or in private somewhere behind some bushes, but no, not out in the city itself. This should not be going on.
Councilmember Rick Robb says he supports much of the ordinance, but has a problem with the public intoxication language.
I can't support that particular section. I understand that people can be a menace, but there's other ways to handle it than making a law saying outlawing drunk walking.
Councilmember Mary Sattler disagrees.
We have 75 cabs that run day and night. We have people who are designated drivers. And quite frankly, in weather conditions like we have right now where it's 40 below, walking down the road drunk is dangerous drinking.
Another issue is where the citation money will go. Right now, state statutes do outlaw public intoxication and other violations, but since the Bethel Municipal Code has not been updated to reflect that, the state gets the money from the fines. Bethel City Attorney Patty Burley says the new ordinance would fix that.
What it's doing is diverting the funds, which are copied verbatim from state law, from going to the state and going to the city instead. Same ticket, same workload, same everything, but the money's going to the city instead.
The city council voted to introduce the ordinance and will discuss it at future meetings. In Bethel, I'm Mark Earhart.
A Seattle-based tour company is adding another vessel to its Alaska routes. Uncruise Adventures is one of several small ship lines increasing capacity in what appears to be a growing market. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
It's still a few weeks before the tourist season begins, but the small cruise ship Wilderness Explorer is already tied up at a Juneau dock. It just finished a charter and is being cleaned up for its summer duties. Larry West leads the way on board, pointing out some of the amenities.
One thing you'll notice if you look at the back of the vessel is it's been sort of modified to accommodate a platform that can be easily lowered into the water to launch kayaks and things.
On the other side of it, once you're done your active adventure, you want to come back in this place also. We always have saunas and hot tubs on all of our vessels so that you can come back on board and relax until the next day's adventure.
That's Lori Cooper, an expedition guide for Uncruise Adventures, which also employs West. The 76-passenger Wilderness Explorer is one of several ships added to the company's lineup in recent years. This season's addition is the 88-passenger Legacy, where West will lead a team of costumed guides.
We will be focusing especially on recreating authentic historical moments.
The living history theme is a different approach for Uncruise Adventures, the new name for sister lines Intersea Discoveries and American Safari.
The vessel itself is designed to look like patterned after a vessel from the late 19th century that would have brought anxious miners to Alaska in search of gold in the Klondike.
The Legacy used to be the Spirit of 98. One of a fleet of small ships operated by Cruise West, which went out of business about 3 years ago. Other companies, including Sitka-based Alaskan Dream, have purchased and renovated other Cruise West ships for inside passage operations.
So I think this coming season, we'll actually be seeing more small cruise vessels in Southeast than ever before.
Joel Hansen of Sitka works for the boat company, a two-ship line sailing between Juneau and his hometown. Unlike the big cruisers, there's no centralized database of small ship sailings, but Hansen's convinced capacity is increasing.
I think the trend is probably, you know, it may not grow rapidly, but it does seem to be, and it has the potential to continue to grow.
It's always nice to have visitors come to town and be interested in just our unique culture.
Liz Cabrera works for the Petersburg Economic Development Council. Her town sees no large cruise ships docked during the summer, so when a new small vessel ties up, the passengers are noticed.
And hopefully spending a little bit of their money on our local shops downtown, and that's great for our merchants and also for our sales tax revenue for our borough.
Many small ship passengers spend more money. Their cruises often run in the range of $3,000 to $12,000 per person, including meals and excursions. Many larger ships offer deals below $1,000 or less, but don't include land-based tours. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
It's the classic symbol of spring in the interior, the first of thousands of migrating Canada geese that stop over in Fairbanks on their way to summer nesting grounds in the Arctic, were spotted at the Creamers Field Migratory Waterfowl Refuge yesterday. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Alaska Department of Fish and Game Creamers Field biologist Lori Beck says the April 3rd arrival date is the second earliest after April 2nd in 2010.
They typically, in all of the years we've been collecting data, which was from 1976, April 12th is the average, but the 10-year average is actually April 7th, so we're not too far off target.
Beck says the geese migrate according to a schedule dictated by weather conditions and length of day. The state plowed the fields at Creamers Tuesday for the birds. Beck says the first sighting often corresponds with clearing of the snow.
We try to plow in anticipation of them being here within 7 to 10 days, so usually when we get the call from Delta Junction that they've been spotted at Clearwater Lake, we know that is a cue to go ahead and clear the fields here so they have a place to land once they get here.
Beck says the geese will feed on leftover barley from last summer until volunteers get out Saturday to spread 4,000 pounds of grain for them. She says the geese typically leave Fairbanks in early to mid-May to head north. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Mark Earhart in Bethel, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created by the Alaska State Legislature to develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of public transportation systems. The authority has completed required environmental work to date, and the Federal Highway Administration has given its approval needed to move forward. There's more information at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority. The University of Alaska Anchorage, the ultimate cross-trainer for finding your place in the world, home to stellar academic programs and an exciting campus energy with all of the thrills you'll only find outside of an office or classroom. The University of Alaska Anchorage, amazing stories being written every day. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.